Chapter 26. The Imperial shuttle circles the base. From up here, Sloan can see everything. The command HQ, the landing platforms, the lines of walkers and starfighters. Everything looks prefab, as if it was hastily constructed. As if it's all temporary, she thinks. The shuttle lands around the far side of the base, easing into a hangar bay whose mouth is eclipsed by the shadow of a tall ridge. Rax is not on this shuttle with her. Brenton is. He sits silently across from her. He's frightened. She can see it in his eyes. The eyes of prey looking up into the jaws of a predator. Sloane will not be scared. She refuses.
I am the predator, she thinks. I'm close now. So close.
Rax may have taken her captive, but that also puts her hands very close to his neck. The ramp opens. Sloane sees that the other two ships sit to their right. One of the troopers shoves her and Brenton down the ramp. Wexley loses his footing, falling hard without his balance, and the trooper ushering him forward stops to kick Brenton in the side. Hard. The others laugh.
This is not my empire, she thinks.
It is sloppy and cruel. They pick Brenton up and push him down next to her. Behind her back, the magnacuffs are uncomfortably tight. Rax awaits her, already off the shuttle. Troopers have lined up on either side of him. And Brendel Hux is here, too, the man behind Arcanis. Hux was helping to train the next generation of stormtroopers. She, with the aid of the bounty hunter Mercurial Swift, helped to extract Brendel and his son from Arcanis before it fell to the Republic. He's now on Rax's own Shadow Council. The man's a blustering slob, and she sees that he's let himself go. A gut strains at his belt. His hair is a mess. His eyes look tired. Those eyes look to the margins of the hangar, from left to right. And it's then that Sloane sees that others have joined them too. Along each wall of the hangar are children. 2 dozen of them, roughly. They are young, some early in their teenage years, others not yet that age. They all wear plain white uniforms, like night clothes. Rax smiles.
Troopers, weapons down, please. We're all friends.
The stormtroopers lower their blasters. But Rax says,
No, no, all the way down, to the floor.
The troopers give one another brief looks of confusion, but do as asked. They stoop, laying the weapons upon the ground. Rax walks up to her, looking her over.
Do you see how the troopers have marked their armor?
Painted it, carved it up,
burned it with hot metal. They have transcended mere service. They are not just soldiers. They are something altogether more tribal. More ferocious. Less human. All animal.
He sighs.
But I still don't know that it's enough.
What have you done with my empire? She asks, desperate.
He grins.
Ah, let me show you.
Gallius Rax's hand rises in the air, forming a fist. He snaps his fingers once. The lights in the hangar go out. Sloane's heart jumps into her throat. Her eyes are slow to adjust, but her ears hear the sounds of the fracas. She thinks to run, to duck, to flinch, to flee, but she can't imagine where she would even go or what she would do. All she does instead is tighten her body and lower herself to the smallest profile she can, hunkering down so that her chin is tucked between her knees. Blaster fire lances the dark now. But that doesn't last long. After which there are thumps, thuds, crunches, and grunts of pain. Silence now stretches out for 1 beat, 2, 3, until it is ended by another snap of the fingers. The lights come on. Again, her eyes have to adjust, Everything goes from bleeding black to overwhelming white. And as her vision reconstitutes, she sees the floor is littered with bodies. The bodies belong to stormtroopers, all dead by the look of it. Standing over them are the children. Many hold sharp, crude knives with handles swaddled in dark tape, the blades made of black, dull steel. Some knives are buried in the backs of trooper necks, shoved elegantly, perfectly up under the helmet into the brainstem. Some are under the trooper's arms, where another gap in the armor waits and makes them vulnerable. A few of the children hold blasters, too, rifles venting smoke. One of those children is a tall girl, with her hair shorn to the scalp. Her face is a dead, emotionless mask. Brendel Hux, in contrast, is smiling. It is the smile of a child, giddy, broad, as if he's just seeing outer space for the first time, or just had his first taste of sweet taff. Has she ever seen him smile before? It is a terror to behold. What was it Rax said to her back on the Ravager? Back when he commanded her to rescue Brendel from Arcanus? The Empire must be fertile and young. Children are crucial to our success. Many of our officers are old. We need that kind of vitality, that brand of energy you get with the young. The Empire needs children. Sloane fails to repress a shudder. She dearly wants to vomit, but she dare not give Gallius Rax the satisfaction. The counselor, for his part, offers slow, measured applause.
"Behold, Sloane," he says, "the future of my empire. I hope you enjoyed the show. You'll soon see that this is only just the beginning."
She has no words. Brenton is speechless as well, having fallen back on his tailbone, slumping against the still body of the trooper that was guarding him. His mouth is open and slack. His eyes are wrenched wide with horror. And that's when Brendel, finally composing himself, steps forward and whispers something in Rax's ear. Now it is the counselor's turn to smirk.
"The final battle is coming," he says. "I'd like you to see it. The both of you. You are witnesses from both the old Empire and the conquering rebels. I have a seat for you reserved. Brendel, you and the children escort these two to their seats, will you? Seems I have a speech to give."
Finally, it has come to pass. Finally, the New Republic has smelled the blood he's been casting into the water, and finally, they are arriving to take a bite. It's all coming together. Hux's child soldiers have proven themselves. Yes, those troopers were unarmed, but the sheer speed with which the children dispatched trained soldiers was thrilling to behold. They did it eagerly, but without joy and without fear. Further, he has Sloane in hand. The observatory is protected, and he can finally show her now what he has been doing, and how her failure to have faith in him has cost her a role in the grand finale to come. It is time now to give his speech. He thinks to not give a speech at all. Time is of the essence. The New Republic fleet will be here in a matter of hours, maybe minutes. He and the others have to make their way back to the observatory. But no, the speech will be essential. He must fill the Empire with fire. It is his job to stir them, to enrage them, to prime the detonator before he throws it. Besides, this will be his final mark. It will be captured and saved. It will be broadcast for generations. This is a moment for history.
I am making history.
Rax has to remember that. his footprint will be indelible, forever pressed into the mantle of the galaxy's memory. He meets with Tashu and Brendel. Both of them seem overly pleased with themselves. Rax sees no reason right now to remind them that they owe it all to him. Let them bloat on the gas of their own satisfaction. Together they move outside the base to meet with the rest of his council before his empire gathers to hear him speak this last time. Hodnar Borum walks up, hands behind his back, chin up. He suddenly looks 10 years younger, as if the prospect of war is the food that feeds him, the same way water wakes a wilting flower. Borum says as they walk,
"We will win the crown battle handily, Counselor."
Rand is in hologram form, for he is currently aboard the Star Destroyer Inflictor. Beamed by a projector held in the hand of Yup Tashu, the Grand Moff says as his projection bounces,
"Their fleet will be larger than ours, but we have the Ravager. Theirs is still a ragtag force, strategically ill-fed and cobbled together of incompatible ships and squadrons. We are unified, and in that unification, we will win this battle."
"Excellent," Rax says as he strides boldly toward the stage. And he means it. It is excellent. All of it. Even the part where they are wrong. The general asks,
"Where is Obdur? We should be considering our messaging during all of this." "Ferrick has taken sick," Rax answers curtly.
It's not a lie. Not really. Being stabbed to death in your bed is quite sickening. That moment serves as another success of Hux's program. A few of the children have proven particularly effective, it seems. His advisors want to keep on nattering at him, but what they have to say matters little, after all, and only serves themselves. It is time to speak. Rax shushes the others with a hand and strides past them, up a set of metal steps onto the dais. The stage is small, erected at the fore of the base and looking out over the tens of thousands of troopers gathered. Above, the fleet hangs like specters. Around him and the troops are TIE fighters, bombers, troop carriers, shuttles, transports, walkers. The engine of war has thrummed to life. The Empire awaits his talk, though truly right now, he has one audience of note. Behind him and above him, on the roof on the command headquarters, he knows that Sloane and her rebel scum cohort sit. Rax steps out in front of the podium and speaks. His image is projected large behind him, a massive flickering hollow statue. His voice is beamed loudly over all of them, so it is less like a man speaking and more like a god, whose divine command comes as a crashing, crushing wave. The speech that he gives is one he has been rehearsing for months. It is designed as a mechanism. The best speeches are performances meant not to give information or to convey truth, but rather to leave an effect. It is vital not to make his people think, but only to force them to feel. He does not want to leave them with uncertainty. They need only answers. The best speech is not a question mark. It is an exclamation. His voice booms as he speaks.
"Loyal soldiers of the Galactic Empire, madness is at our door. Ruffians and barbarians of the Rebel Alliance have claimed for themselves a government of no legitimacy. A government given over to corrosion, chaos, and the corruption born of alien minds and radical terroristic teachings. It was our own Emperor Palpatine who showed us the weakness that presents itself when a republic becomes sick with the disease of craven politics and the illness of elite oligarchs who force their agendas upon us. With the death of our beloved Emperor, our own empire was cast into disorder. It gave strength to the illegitimate and embolden them with a fraudulent claim of bringing peace and justice to the galaxy. And yet for so long, who have been the champions of peace? The only war visited upon the galaxy has been the one brought by the criminal Rebel Alliance. Scattered and lost, we could have perished. After attacking Chandrilla and injuring the fraudulent politicians who seek to steal the sanctity of our galaxy, I brought us here to Jakku, unifying our people and our powers in this faraway world. A hard world that has tested our mettle and forged us and sharpened us into a stronger blade. A blade with which we will slit the throats of the traitors that crawl on their bellies toward our door. Soon they come. Soon they try to finish what they started. They want to end the Empire. They want to set up as a tumor on a healthy body, leeching the blood while growing fatter like a parasite. They deny our legitimacy. They lie about the stability and sanity we created for the galaxy. For those are their truest weapons, deception and delusion. We must not give in. We must not believe that they are right. We must see them as they are. Brutes and barbarians. They are subhuman. They are alien to us in the truest sense of the word, and are deserving of no mercy from us. This is our zero hour, and I call you now to do your duty by the light of the glorious Galactic Empire. The battle to come is not a fight for Jakku, or even a fight for the Empire. It is a fight for all the galaxy. If we fail here, we fail everywhere. We fail our loved ones. We fail our children. We fail all who crave constancy and light in these dark times. We pursue no other aim than freedom from oppression, liberty from lies, emancipation from depravity. Today is the day we fight back and reclaim our galaxy. Today is the day the New Republic dies at the Empire's hand. Today, we take our future!
If only they knew what that future meant. And then, it's as if the galaxy is listening. As if the Force is truly on his side. For what occurs is an event of such theatrical synchronicity that Gallius Rax nearly drops to his knees and weeps like a baby. The attack begins. Thunder ripples as the New Republic fleet spears the sky, already launching a fusillade, and the Imperial fleet above fires its own in response. Far above their heads, turbo lasers slash the sky. Torpedoes corkscrew. Javelins of heavy plasma fire slices open the blue. Rax bellows one last entreaty.
The battle is upon us. Go! Go and drag them down to the ground and break their necks with your boots! Take their heads! End their tyranny!
And now, he must go collect the others and board a ship before it's too late. The observatory beckons, and it is time for his egress.
No, no, no!
Sloane is on her knees. Her hands are bound. So are her ankles. Brenton has fallen over, letting himself topple to the side and curl in on himself. The two of them are up on the roof of the Empire's command building, underneath the flap of a tent. They are alone. No one watches them. At first, Sloane thought, how strange. But now she sees she has nowhere to go. Even if she could get free. As she and Brenton are forced to sit there and stomach Rax's speech, she tries to understand what's even happening here. Why let her witness this? What is she even meant to see? The man's speech is base and dull, and full of the pompous rhetorical milk on which Gallius Rax is fed. And yet, it works, doesn't it? Sloane feels it in her own belly. The trumpeting, triumphant roar of an empire spurned. The fear of a new republic ascendant. The certainty of being in the right and committing violence against those in the wrong. And with that, a tiny mote of doubt plants inside her belly. The seed grows fast tendrils, and she wonders, am I the product of confidently championed lies? Was this my empire all along? Will it die here on Jakku? As Rax's rhetoric finishes, the sky opens up, and as if perfectly timed to the conclusion of his speech, the battle begins. Capital ships rage in the planet's orbit. Weapons fire drums like thunder. Specks appear in the sky and turn from translucent ghosts to buzzing black flies. Starfighters spilling out of the New Republic ships. Already they enter atmosphere, scoring the ground with plasma. And the Empire roars to meet it. TIE fighters lift off and in moments are launching forth like rocks from a slingshot. Soon the sky is chaos. Fighters erupt in flame. Laser fire rends the air. X-wings and TIE fighters dance in and around banded clouds, while Imperial walkers turn to march out into the desert, ready to protect the base at any cost. The battle in the skies has begun, and soon the ground war will rise. The numbers of the New Republic fleet are superior. She can see that from here. Perhaps Rax stoked the proper ferocity in his troopers, and maybe, just maybe, his people can coordinate a proper pushback. Odinar Borum is one of the smartest ground war strategists, and the troops trust him. But if she's correct, Rand is the man in charge of the skies. And though the Grand Moff is a capable leader, he does not have the courage or the inventiveness to win a fight of this magnitude. Sloane wishes suddenly to be up there. That is her place, commanding those ships, ruling the heavens, destroying any who dare defile them. The Ravager casts a massive shadow, and she knows that whoever is in command of that ship is wrong for the job. It should be her. She could save the Empire with the Ravager, if she had a chance to get to it. Such ego, she thinks. Perhaps the firepower of that SSD will afford them the chance to save the day. The Empire may win this battle. But even if it does, at what cost? And what else does Rax have up his sleeve? What is the show? Who is the audience?